Yukon River In-Season Salmon Management Teleconference. Your participation is essential to our discussions on managing the Yukon River's vital salmon runs. My name is Serena Alstrom, and I'm the Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We will cover key topics such as run assessments, environmental conditions, management strategies, and stakeholder feedback. We thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Tandon Chiefs Conference, for their support. These teleconferences facilitate communication across the 22-mile expanse of the Yukon River, enabling fishermen, processors, researchers, managers, and other users to exchange real-time information and engage in effective salmon management discussions. The teleconferences were designed to bridge communication gaps between local users and fishery managers. We aim to make these calls a platform for actionable feedback, providing insights and recommendations to management entities. Designing the topics of discussion and feedback format, we want to ensure these calls contribute to tangible improvements in fisheries management and provide updates on Yukon River research. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Alaghanak, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Mission, Anvik, Huslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. I'd like to welcome all the new callers and our new board members as well. We encourage young fishers to participate in the calls to learn and engage in Yukon River fisheries. I ask all our participants today to please be respectful of one another. This space is to be used as a communication tool between all users of the Yukon River. By working together, we can foster positive outcomes when we support one another. Goyana to all of you who are participating today and for your time. As a reminder, please press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. I'd like to first ask that if there is any media on the line, to please announce yourself. As always, we do have KZPA registration in Fort Yukon online. Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call today?
John Deck, Grayling, first-time caller, just going to listen in at this time. Formerly on the board of for Holy Cross of the YRDFA when you guys first started, along with my mom, Angela Demento. That's way back in the day. So I'll just be listening at this time. Thank you.
Great. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Okay, we'll start off the call with our Yukon area managers from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Do we have Matthew Olson or Bonnie Barba on the line?
Yeah, hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matt Olson. I'm the Yukon River Falls. He's the manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game down in the Monarch. I think we'll start with assessments with Bonnie Borba, and then I'll go into management after that.
Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bonnie. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Bonnie Borba. I'm the fall season research biologist from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I'm going to provide the initial fall assessment. The fall chum salmon run size projection based on the summer to fall relationship is less than 200,000 fish and is lower than last year. The average fall chum salmon run size is over 950,000 fish. And we will be using in-season assessments to determine the run size and watching the age classes. As of July 28, the cumulative CPV for Lori Contest fish is well below average. The first quarter points of fall chum salmon passage usually occurs around August 2nd for this project. The Mainstem Yukon River Sonar Project operated near Pilot Station transitioned to fall season counts on July 19th. A group of fish moved in the river early last week and just finished passing Pilot Station. However, the strength was poorer than the summer pulses had been. As of July 28th, the cumulative passage of 53,000 chum salmon, and this compares to the median cumulative passage of 133,000 for this date. The historical median date at Pilot Station for the first quarter point is typically around July 30th. The genetic mixed stock analysis, they're used to determine the mixture of summer to fall chum salmon. The third stratum of chum salmon genetic samples from the Pilot Station sonar test fishery from July 5th through the 18th consisted of 99% summer chum salmon, of which 50% were bound for the lower river, 30% were bound for the middle river, and 20% were bound for the Tanana River. The lower summer stocks were below average, while the middle and Tanana River were above average for that time period. Aerial surveys start the first week of August, and we will try to look into the Upper Koyukuk River and Henshaw Creek for some of these lower and middle river fish if the weather cooperates. The first fall season strata should be headed to the lab later this week. Once they are analyzed, we will provide stock assessment for transitioning summer to fall season after July 19th. The three main fall chum salmon stock groups reported will be the Tregenjik, Chinjak, and Dronjik, which is group one, and the Canadian stocks is group two, and the Tanana River fall stocks is group three. The preliminary age composition of 47 chum salmon sampled from the drift gill nets in the Lower Yukon Test Fish Project from July 16th through the 24th consisted of 74% age 4, 26% age 5. This compares to the 2001 to 2024 historical averages of 58% age 4 and 41% age 5. The percentage of female chum salmon from July 16th through the 27th was 49%, which is near the historical average. The average length was 572 millimeters and is below the historical average of 581 millimeters through July 27th. Monitoring of escapements in the upper Yukon portion of the drainage within Alaska will be assessed with sonars operated on the Tregenjik and Chinjak rivers, starting operations around August 8th. And Eagle's average transition date from Chinook to fall chum salmon monitoring is around August 20th. And last year, the transition occurred late on August 28th. We will be using both Alaska and Canadian assessment projects to monitor escapements, particularly relative to the drainage-wide goal, the Canadian treaty objectives for the Fishing Branch River and the Yukon River Mainstem at Eagle, as well as Alaska goals on the upper Yukon, on the Tregenjik, the Chandler River, and the Delta River within the Tanana River drainage. Coho salmon typically enter the Yukon River in mid-August, with the bulk of the run occurring between August 16th and the 27th at the Mainstem sonar operated near Pilot Station. The Mainstem sonar captured its first coho salmon on July 24th, and they caught another one yesterday. As of 7:27, some folks reported last time that they were hearing how the coho were doing over there, and I checked in on the Bethel sonar project right now on the Kuskokwim indicates that the run is well above average, but they have earlier run timing than the runs that were observed since 2020. So we're monitoring the returns in both the Kuskokwim and Norton Sound areas. It's a little too early to get much from Norton Sound. And but looking at their relationship, the historical relationship between their performance relative to the Yukon River coho salmon stocks, there's not much correlation there. But hopefully the coho salmon will be an indicator of ocean conditions since they typically only spend 1 year at sea. And we'll see when we get more fish in the river which way they're going to go. That's all I have. Matt's going to cover the management strategies for fall season.
Yeah, thanks, Bonnie. Yeah, again, good afternoon, everyone. This is Matt Olson with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game down here in Amonik. And fall season, you know, started in the Lower River on July 16th and is continuing to progress upriver. As Bonnie was saying, you know, the fall chum run projection and current escapement you know, are both well below average and aren't likely to meet the lower end of the drainage wires, cave and coal. So it's 300,000 is lower end. That we would need to see to have any directed harvest, and similarly coves are going to be well below average as well. As mentioned last week, yeah, due to these low run projections, we're going to start the fall season close for both fall chum and coho. And the use of the 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets and manned fish wheels for non-salmon will be on that weekend-only schedule that was discussed both at the preseason YIRFA meeting and through recent YIRFA teleconference calls. And will be only allowed from noon Thursdays through noon Sundays. We've already announced that weekend schedule for the use of those 4-inch gill nets and manned fish wheels from the coastal district all the way up through subdistrict 5C. Currently, Chinook, Chum, and Coho salmon fishing is closed, and the use of 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets for non-salmon are closed in the coastal districts through 4A Upper, including the Keokuk River. Both gears will reopen on Thursday, July 31st, so Thursday at noon, and will be open until noon on Sunday, August 3rd, and then we'll reopen on that same noon Thursday to noon Sunday schedule until further notice. Fishing schedule for subdistricts 4B and C and 5ABC was announced yesterday. Chinook and Chum salmon fishing is closed, and retention of coho will also be closed starting at midnight tonight. Use of 4-inch gill nets will close at noon on Sunday, August 3rd, and then we'll reopen along with manned fish wheels for non-salmon from noon Thursday, August 7th to noon Sunday, August 10th, and we'll be on the same noon Thursday to noon Sunday schedule until further notice. Time for districts 5B and 6 hasn't been announced yet, but will be in the near future. It's about all I have, so thank you for listening, and we'll go to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt and Bonnie. Do we have Dina Jalen on the line?
Yeah, hi. This is Fred West.
Fred can go first. And Fred. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, Fred, go first.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. So I'm Fred West with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the summer season research biologist, and I'll give a brief assessment update. So for Chinook, we've got we're still assessing at a few projects. We've seen a few Chinook still passing pilot, but right now we're pretty much for Eagle, we are most likely at the midpoint for late run timing, which is July 29th, and that's today. We saw our, I guess, biggest passage past Eagle yesterday at over 1,000 fish. So it kind of makes sense that we're probably around the midpoint or the peak of the run right now. And the run is currently tracking above 2012 and 2022-24, but it's still well below average, and we'll not likely meet the 71,000 border passes goal or other goals within the U.S. And for other assessment projects, we've got the ANVIC sonar, which they ended counting on the 26th of July with a count of 47,255, which is well below the median cumulative passage of 444,000. And they had a few days of sonar. They had to pull the pods for high water. So that count should be considered a minimum, and then we'll look postseason to reassess those numbers. The China, that number for Chinook is currently at 861 Chinook, which is well below average at 4,700. Summer Chum is at 775 fish, which is also below historical cumulative average of just over 2,000 fish. For the Salcha, that is at, for snook, it's 1,417, which is below the cumulative average of 6,602. Summer chum, that is 1,155, which is also below average. And so for chum salmon, those assessment projects will usually stop before the full count for chum, just because of the way the funding and stuff works. But so we don't fully assess for chum. And yeah, I mentioned, so the Eagle sonar number is currently at 12,577, which is below the historical cumulative average at this time of 32,921. But it is tracking a little bit better than the recent years, but still pretty poor. We do have some updated snook age comp at Pilot Station, which is in the most recent update that we just released earlier today. And we are currently at 18% age 4, 65% age 5, and 16% age 6, which the age 4s and age 5s are above average, or age 6s are below average. And yeah, that's about it for now. So pass it on to Dina.
Thanks, Fred. This is Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I don't have much to add for management. Matt gave a really good overview of how things are going as we move out of summer season management and into fall season as that timing works its way upriver. That's the only thing I have to add is that Mike Parker, who's the new summer season assistant, will be going out next week to do some aerial surveys kind of in the lower and middle part of the Yukon to get some estimates of some of the salmon that went upstream that, you know, didn't have projects on them, like the Andreevsky and that, locations like that. So they'll be out flying around. That'll be good. I'll pass it over to Keith with the Fish and Wildlife Service and if they've got any updates from their side.
Thank you, Dina. This is Keith Heron with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I'm the assistant in-season fishery manager on the federal side, and I don't really have much to add, but I just wanted to thank everyone that's still calling in and still checking in on the fisheries information, and I'm sorry that it's really bad news, and it's really heartbreaking, I know, for all of us on this call. But if you do need help getting information or staying up to date, finding those counts that were mentioned, finding the schedule in your area, please reach out to any of us. We're happy to help get you the information you're looking for or answer your questions. I hope everyone has a good rest of their day, and I look forward to hearing those speak up on the call today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Keith, Dina, and my mind went blank. Fred, we'll move on to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do we have Adam O'Dell or Jacqueline Kendall on the line?
Hi, good afternoon, Serena. This is Jacqueline. I think to start, I'll have Adam O'Dell provide a bit of a stock assessment update for Canada, and then I'll move into management after he's done. So, Adam, if you're on the line, please take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Jacqueline. My name is Adam O'Dell. I'm the senior fisheries biologist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada and Whitehorse. So I'll provide a brief update on the stock specimen progress to date. We have technicians located at our Porcupine River sonar that is near the community of Old Crow, and it began counting as of June 29th with full day counts on both banks on the 30th. The current cumulative count of Chinook salmon passing the sonar site is 289 fish as of July 28th. It's slightly higher than the estimate to date last season, but well below that project average, the average being a little over 1,700. This is the 12th year of the project providing estimates for Chinook passage into the Canadian portion of the Porcupine River. However, you know, chum have been observed in the area so far this season, but we won't be transitioning into assessing in-season chum passage at the Porcupine Sonar site for another 1 or 2 weeks. That crossover date yet to be determined. You know, Fred did touch on the Eagle sonar assessment update. We do have technicians as well that do support this operation, and, you know, counts there have been underway for approximately 1 month. Looking elsewhere, the Big Salmon River Sonar Project, this has been running since July 11th, and it's provided a cumulative total estimate of 333 Chinook as of July 26th. This is nearly twice the passage to date estimated from last season, but less than half the average. So this project typically does use two sonars to assess Chinook passage, but due to technical issues early in the season, it's only been using a single sonar for pretty well the entire season. Now, there are other Chinook assessment projects currently operational or in the planning phases within Canada. Most of these are led or managed by Yukon First Nations. And updates will be provided as each progress. Now, if project managers with any of the Yukon First Nations are online today, I'll pause for a moment here and allow them the opportunity to speak to the progress of their assessment projects. But any of those who may not be online or able to provide that update, I can follow up with the updates just after a brief moment here. So just give a sec here. If anyone's online, they can touch on their projects. Otherwise, I'll fill in. Okay. If anyone is on here and just having trouble unmuting, just cut me off and that's fine. I'll continue though. So the Klondike River Sonar Project, this is located in Dawson City. It has been operational since June 26th. This project is run by Trondik Wichin First Nation. They experienced issues with one of the sonars early in the season, but they currently have two functioning sonars. So they have 102 Chinook estimated to have passed as of July 27th. This is less than last year. They had 152 to date in 2024, and this is well below the project average, that average being just over 900 fish. So the Klondike River, that's the first tributary assessment that fish would be assessed on once they enter the main stem Yukon River in Canada. So the Pelly River Sonar Project, this one's also operational, and this is run by Selkirk First Nation with two sonars. It's a pretty significantly sized river. Chinook salmon counts total 1,280 as of July 28th. This is compared with 874 on this date last season, so we're seeing a slight uptick, about 50% more to date at least in early season passage. But however, it is about half of the 10-year average, that 10-year average being about 2,600 fish. And the last project that we have updates for and operational so far this season is the Nisutlan River Sonar Project. This is run by Tezan Klinka Council. This is the second full year of operation of this sonar. It started on July 16th. It is the furthest upstream recurring assessment project in the Yukon River drainage. And as of July 26th, they've had 11 Chinook pass so far, past the assessment site so far. And coincidentally, they've also had some issues with some sonars. So I think they're currently only operating a single side of the river right now, but hopefully be getting the second one back and operational soon. So there's three other projects which should be up and running in the near future. There's the Tikini Sonar Project, which Quanlin Dunn First Nation runs, and this should be, I believe they're setting up the sonar this week. There's the Tachin Creek Video Weir, and this one typically starts around early August as well, so this should be installed in the near future also, maybe provide an update next week or the following. And lastly is the White Horse Fish Ladder. So this is the fish ladder that does allow passage past the dam here in White Horse. And this doesn't necessarily require any kind of setup. They have the staff on site and there's everything set up. They're just waiting for the presence of the first fish to pass, which typically happens late July, early August. So I anticipate next week maybe providing some sort of update there with numbers And that wraps up the assessment update for today. If there's any questions, we can take them. Otherwise, I'll just pass it along to Jacqueline if she has anything she wants to touch on. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, I can move into a pretty brief management update for Canada. First of all, Serena, am I coming through okay? I just want to make sure I unmuted correctly.
Yes, you are. Go ahead, Jacqueline.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Jacqueline Kendall here. I'm the Acting Operations Manager with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. I'm going to provide a brief management update, although I will note that there have been no changes in Canadian management since the last call. So I'll start with Chinook because we are still in Chinook season in Canada. DFO closed the recreational fishery, and the commercial and domestic fisheries are also closed. With the projection being so far below the rebuilding target, there will also be no opportunities to harvest Chinook salmon in the First Nations subsistence fishery again this year. So really unfortunate. I could move on to Chum as well. We're not quite in the Chum season, but we'll note that similar to Chinook, DFO has also closed the recreational Chum fishery for 2025, and again, the commercial and domestic are also closed. And similarly with Chinook, the low projection means that opportunities to harvest Chum salmon in the First Nations subsistence fishery are not anticipated again in 2025. So a very brief update from me, Serena. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jacqueline. We'll now move into our organizational reports. Do I have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission online?
Hi, Serena. This is Jasmine. Can you hear me?
Hi, Jasmine. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. We have a couple of updates from the Yukon River Fish Commission. As of today, we are officially hiring for an executive director. You can find that job description and application on our website at yritfc.org/employment. And we're going to be accepting a applications through August 8th, and that same website is also a pretty good resource for fishing updates by district. I've been trying to keep that updated as I can, and we've also been sharing a weekly salmon passage summary that includes the current counts alongside some of the historical data to help provide more context in how the run is going throughout the season. So if you'd like to receive those summaries, you can email me at communications@yritfc.org to be added to our email list. But other than those are kind of just some organizational updates. Janessa and I have been working on keeping up to date with the announcements and the openings and closures and trying to get that information out as best as we could, and luckily we've been able to coordinate with him at Chief Conference, so thankful for that. But yeah, that's our update for now. I hope you all have a good day.
Great. Thank you, Jasmine. We will move on to the BBAYK Coalition. Do I have anyone online?
Serena, this is Gail. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Gail.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Gail Vick with Bristol Bay AYK group. Just this week, we're going to be talking about some deadlines coming up. And as I noted last week, the ACR deadline is August 29th for anybody that wants to put in an agenda change request into the Board of Fish. The Board of Fish work session is on October 28th, 29th in Anchorage, and the big issues for discussion there will be escapement goals. And there are three major escapement systems that in the AYK agenda, I have those links listed. And so I guess that's so maybe Serena can share that with you and that would be for the AYK and for Norton Sound and Cotsby area and for Chinook Management Area. I encourage everybody to look at those escapement goal memos and to pay attention to any changes that you might note. We are recommending no lowering of any escapement goals, which is sometimes a trend. And then Board of Fish proposals, of course, are going to be due sometime soon. We'll have that fish calendar sent out here as an update for all the deadlines that are due. And then finally, the CHUM EIS Council is in February, so I'm sure all of you are aware of that final EIS action on my catch. So that's what I have. Thank you. Oh, one last thing, Frida.
Yes, go ahead.
There is going to be an AYK meeting this week on Thursday, but not the following week because I'm getting my shoulder replacement. So we're taking a hiatus next week. So thank you.
Thank you, Gail. We'll move on to Council of Yukon First Nations. Do we have Elizabeth on the line? We will move on to Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Do we have Taylor on the line?
Hi, Serena. No updates here.
Okay, thank you, Taylor. We will move on to Tana Chiefs Conference. Okay, hearing none, I'll provide a brief update for YRTFA. Again, my name is Serena Alstrom. I'm Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. The biotechnician training camp was completed in Eagle on Sunday, and all the participants flew home yesterday. The turnout was great. The training was very successful. We look forward to our training in St. Mary's next year in June. Not much going on our end, just grant reports and some office administration work. We will move into the community level reports. I'll be calling by district. I'll be starting at the headwaters in Canada and moving down to the mouth of the Yukon River. We'll start with Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pellycrossing, Carmax, and Teslin. Do I have anyone on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. Again, calling on Canada. Do we have anyone from Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pellycrossing, Carmax, or Teslin on the line? We'll move into Alaska with District Y5, A, B, C, and D, Tana Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkisa, Dubinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Hey, Serena, Andy.
Yes, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Not anything to really to report on fishing here. We're closed right now. Water has been coming up. We've been getting some rain around here, drift coming down the river. Not real heavy, but indications the water levels are coming up, which is actually, I think, kind of good. We're extremely low water for the last 2 weeks. I had an opportunity to spend some time with the YRTFA tech training program. I thought it was a really well-run program. Had some great conversations with some of the people participating in that. I really appreciate the opportunity to to see how that went and to have some really great discussions about salmon fisheries. I would like to make a request from the managers. I think it's really important when we get ASL reports from Eagle and Pilot, if you're able to give us components of the sex ratios. I think that's super important. As we all know, numbers of fish are important, but the quality of escapement is actually critical. And I think it's really important for people to begin to understand how important the female component of the run is in conjunction with the age of the fish. I'm a little concerned to hear that our age six-year-olds are so low. I'd be interested in hearing what the female composition at Pilot is. And my final thought is I'm really concerned about the fall chum. They're actually in worse shape than Chinook salmon are. I think in our rebuilding efforts for Chinook salmon, it's going to be absolutely critical to have fall chum also rebuilding. I think one of the most critical factors for rebuilding king salmon will be the health of the spawning grounds when fish do return. And fall chum are the leaders and the most important component of bringing marine-derived nutrients into those critical habitat areas. Without that, spawning productivity and success rates are going to be much lower as the capacity of spawning tributaries will diminish with the loss of those marine nutrients. We've seen that happen. There's a lot of science that backs that. I think there's strong evidence of that even up on the Porcupine Fishing Branch region where fish have been declining. So I really want to encourage people. Chinook salmon is super important to rebuild, but also critically important are fall chum if we want to be able to rebuild Chinook salmon at a higher pace or at all. So that's my comments. Thank you, Serena. Appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Then calling on District Y5 A, B, C, and D. Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute.
Serena, this is Ruby and Eagle. Can you hear me?
Yes, Ruby. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I don't have anything official to report today. Two of my families are traveling, and of course, no fishing is happening right now. As Andy said, we've been getting some rain and cooler temperatures this week, which is great. We've had a hot summer. One positive thing to note is the berries in our area, at least, are super abundant this year and of good quality, so people will be able to get a lot of good berries here pretty soon. And that's about all I have. I'd like to thank Andy for his excellent questions and comments, and I'd like to back everything that he says also. So thank you, Andy, and thanks for everyone for listening.
Great. Thank you, Ruby. Again, calling on District Y5 A, B, C, and D, Tanana Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chulkeetsik, Binitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press *6 to unmute. Moving on to District Y6 ABC, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Again, calling on District Y6 ABC, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Moving on to District Y4 A and C, Galena and Ruby. Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute. Moving up the Koyukuk River, we have Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, and Bettles.
Hello, this is Charlene Vent in Huslia.
Hi, Charlene. Go ahead.
The three people I was surveying, one is having boat issues, the second one is out of town, and the third person is still out firefighting. So I know last week TCC sent fish. So I know a lot of people had smokehouses going with TCC fish. Other than that, I don't really have anything else.
Great. Thanks, Charlene. Calling on the Koyukuk River communities of Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, and Bettles. Do I have anyone on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. We'll move into District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalado, and Koyukuk. I do know they are having their sub-regional meeting for the GASH region.
That's why nobody from my region is online. John Dick, clearly.
Yes, go ahead.
But I normally, I originally from Holy Cross, fished in Anvik, and I never fished in Shagluk. But where is everybody at, for one, I'd like to ask. Sounds like a pretty good numbers meeting. I'd like to ask Steve Alaska there, where are they at on bringing our numbers up with the hatcheries on the Koyukuk River and up there a little further up where in the Anvik and the Koyukuk? Since your numbers on the lower Yukon are producing already, I brought this up before, and I'll bring it up again until we start doing something on our end here to help produce fish. Living here in this area, we're between a rock and a hard place, really, but the trawlers are taking a lot, everybody's saying, you know. And you guys got your numbers up there, but sounds like Canada, from the little bit that I know, is doing their part. They got three hatcheries up there somewhere, I heard. Nothing on the state of Alaska, Yukon River. And since this lack of participation, on this here, on these test fisheries that you guys keep calling and talking about, and these sonars, this is what I propose. John Deck, little fisherman from way back, you put a net, test net, or a test fish wheel in each village along the Yukon. Have it run by their tribal councils. Have it run normally, like a normal fishing season would. Every day, take that fish, donate it to the local elders and local community programs. Encourage the young students and the young children to participate in that one fish wheel, in that one net. This will give you accurate numbers. Accurate numbers. Not broken down sonar numbers. Not numbers from way over there and way over here. It'll give you true numbers from two people eating that fish. All you got to do is train them a little bit, show them how on the video, what they need to do. There's a lot of smart people. Okay? We can all stand up and do this together. There's nobody doing anything. I got out of this business 20 years ago because I know the talk was going nowhere. My mom and my grandfather helped start this YRDFA. So, this is passion in my heart. This is not madness. I'm controlling that. It's sadness. I would like, where's Tamna Chiefs? Why did you have to speak for that? Why do you have to speak for all the natives around that zone? Where are all the natives? They're not participating. You, as an organization and as state representatives, ask yourselves, why are they not at the table? Not the other way around. They're not there for a reason. All these years you guys have been counting our fish, sending our calendars. We've been abiding by your rules and regulations. We don't believe your lies no more. You're not listening to us. This is a peaceful thing I'm asking for. No violence, nothing. It's a solution. It's a possible solution to your numbers. And so people will believe you and help you conserve these fish if they're truly in danger. This is a numbers game. We've been doing this fish for 10,000 years, people. 10,000 years. These people have been here not even 100 years. And they're going to tell you, and you're going to believe, that they killed every fish in this Yukon? 10,000 years says no. And I'm sorry if I'm getting loud and passionate. And I'd like to say one more thing. Where are everybody, state of Alaska, YRDFA, are you introducing this to young people in the villages, in the schools, directly, pay somebody, work with your tribals in the schools, bring them down there, teach them about the fish, the biologies and stuff about it. Well, I'd like to thank you all for listening, but I greatly appreciate the state of Alaska and everybody like that would really, you know, step up to the plate and quit BSing and, you know, put some fish in our Yukon. And if it don't work, well, you know, throw it away and we'll get something else that works. Those fish will be wild fish. They'll be coming from the waters wherever they come from. They're not going to be farm fish at all. So that's one big thing everybody's been telling the Yukon people all this year. That's farmed. They're not going to be natural. They're coming from their headwaters, their own headwaters. That's natural fish. Nothing wrong with them. It's better than tanned or cheese fish from somewhere else. But anyway, thank you very much. I'm sorry if I rattle on. I'll be in on the next week, one, two, and I'm hopefully all you people will reach out to all your people and you'll have a better following by next week or the next meeting.
Great. Thank you, John, for your comments. I appreciate that. Continue to call in. We do reach out to all the communities to let them know about the teleconference, and it's pretty much up to each individual whether they want to join in or not. Please spread the word. Tell people about the teleconference. Have them call in. We do get a good group. We got about 60 people online right now. It's up to the individuals whether or not they want to provide reports or ask questions. And any of the questions that you did ask, I'd hand over to, throw over to management to see if they want to answer any of those questions.
I'd just like to say one more thing. That's the reason I said everything I said was because I know the participating people, you guys are the people who are we're sitting at the table. That's why I said what I said to you people, for you guys to take what I said and run like hell with it. Excuse my language, Edmund Clark. That's mostly. Okay, I'll go back to mute.
Yes, thank you, John. Dina, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, sorry, I don't have a ton to add. I know that there has been some recent discussions about hatcheries, but that is a really big discussion. There's no plan that I know of at this moment to put hatcheries in on the Yukon. There's a lot of concerns with how hatcheries kind of affect natural fish and their ability to maybe outcompete or interact with the wild fish. So there's a lot of concerns and things to think about. There aren't any plans that I know of at this time. And in terms of test fishing, ideally we get back to run sizes where there is fish available to harvest for subsistence and to harvest. And it would be great if communities are able to get together and do a community, community projects and harvest fish in that way and share and teach the youth. That would be really excellent. I think just when runs are this low, it's really hard to justify going out and harvesting additional fish when we're not even making escapement goals. It's just kind of tough to think that, that additional harvest pressure on the fish would be helping when the runs are this low.
And ma'am, that's what I was saying. With having those projects, you guys back in those projects in each one of them villages, that would give you true numbers on this fish. You guys are saying these are the numbers, but you don't see the numbers passing by the villages in their fishing sites. That would give you true numbers. And all of that would be documented, like I just said. So it would be all underneath the study. I just use the subsistence part into it to tie with it. So that's where your fish could go, so you're not wasting the fish. It's going to someplace in the community itself. It's part of your survey, part of your study, to make sure you're doing right. That's my argument on that little part. And as far as with being wild fish, you see it right over there in your anchorage. What's wrong with that hatchery sitting right in Anchorage? That's wild water, isn't it? What about those hatcheries all over on that other side? That's all wild water, isn't it? What's the difference between that water and the Yukon River water? Not a blessed thing, is there? So that argument is out the window. Right then and there. You see, your own science that you guys do, proves your own argument wrong. So, I'm very glad you're sitting there and relaying these things to me. But, you know, it's coming from over your head, what's going on. Because if you tried and the people got together and did it, there could be a hatchery right there yesterday. There could be one there tomorrow by the end of the summer. And you guys know that. You guys know that. You know I'm talking the truth. But go ahead, what's the other point? Anybody else got an answer to my questions?
Well, thank you, John, for your comments. We'll be moving on to other communities to give them the opportunity to ask questions or provide comments.
Hey, John. Great talking to you all.
We'll continue with District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, or Kaikuk. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute your line. If you are using your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. We'll move into District Y3. Do we have anyone from Russian Mission, Holy Cross, or Shaguk on the line?
Hello?
Yes, Basil, go ahead.
Hey, guys, this is Basil. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, everybody. This is Basil at Russian. Good to hear some feisty new comments and somebody from, his name was John, I think, right before me. I feel you, buddy. I feel you. Us two are stuck in the middle. We're a little further downstream than you, but we're stuck in between the... I think all us families are stuck in between the deep-sea fishing and the headwaters that's going on, whatever's going on up there. So it's the whole river stuck between a rock and a hard spot, man. But welcome to the Yerdpa teleconference, weekly teleconference there, buddy. For Russian Mission, I finally was able to do my final, I wasn't doing any weekly surveys because there was no fishing going on and I was working kind of busy and, but I did get around to do this, the final interview questions. I kind of just wanted to get people's, what they thought about this year's, summer salmon fishing anyways. I know we're transitioning into fall season. There's not much fishing going on here anyways, but there's, I know we're transitioning into the fall. Water's dropping. There's no drift. We've been raining steadily for probably 2 weeks now, on and off. We had probably 2 days that got, where the sun peaked out and it got up over 60 degrees for a little while. But other than that, it's been pretty blizzardy, and or not blizzardy, but stormy. Cold, stormy. And the only fishing going on all season long was has been mainly rod and reel for the table food. Nobody got anything stashed away in their freezer for the long cold winter. With the dip net and with the selective fishing with the dip net and the rod and reel, families were able to get only table food. No fish camps were in operation unless you got something coming from somewhere else or things of that nature. But there was no humpies this year, which is kind of scary. Usually on an odd year when there's no humpies, there's still enough to get you pretty worked up when you sit your 4-inch net. So like us mushers, my brother usually one set 4-inch net probably a couple hours on it. We'll say we're going down to pick berries, he sets his net. And then on the way home, we pull it up, boom, everybody got fresh berries from picking berries, and then everybody gets a white fish from for your gudok on the way home. So, and plus the dogs get all the leftovers. But it's been only rod and reel fishing this year. Pretty sad. Every family misses the coming together, not only fishing and providing fish for your family just to sustain yourself throughout the winter, but along with fish comes teamwork, fish camp teamwork, and all the good stuff that goes in with it. All the good vibes and all the kids swimming and all the fish camps, basically elbow to elbow and all doing the same thing, all being happily subsisting and gathering our own food. So we miss all that. And it being the end of season report, you know, basically there was not much fishing going on this year, but it being the end of season report, folks that I talk to, we feel that no one wants these salmon back more than us, and it kind of, I've been saying this for a while, it's all year. It seems like nobody wants these salmon back more than us subsistence families on the Yukon River. Like my buddy said, there's been nothing, all this talk, nothing going on, so we're getting kind of tired of that, and that plus feels like we're shouldering the blame of these salmon not returning, which in reality is basically what's been happening for all these past, especially these last few years. The bycatch number has been higher than the numbers entering the main stem Yukon itself. So that alone tells you where all the mortality is. It's not happening in river, it's happening out in the sea where they grow up. So basically all these, the managers, I respect you guys. We understand your everything you guys offer to the state of Alaska and all the natural resources that you guys help protect. But we feel that these rules and these harsh rules and regulations that should extend out past the Yukon River drainage out into sea where the salmon spend 70% of their life and more than likely are to get their mortality happens out that way. So, and then you got to think of the wanton waste. That thing goes on anywhere in river, boom, your boat's gone, your hunting license is clipped, your ability to sustain yourself is gone. And that's just for, let's say, not deboning a carcass in the field, right? So, you know what I'm saying? We feel that these rules and regulations should extend out to the giant fishing, the corporate giants out in the sea, the guys wiping everything out. So, like I said, bycatch numbers being higher than the total number of fish returning in river, and then the managers having no choice but to protect all the salmon that come into river and protect them all the way into the spawning grounds. Now, look, we're talking about escapement goals into Canada, into Koyukuk, into Tanana. Without any fishing at all in river, these numbers are not even being close to getting met. So that tells you if you, you know, you got it, something has to be done where these salmon spend 70% of their life in order for these, all these escapement goals to be met. That's the only way it's going to happen. We are not the problem. We've been proving it for 21 years. That's three full 7-year salmon life cycles. Nothing has improved, and we're just, you know, beating the same old war drum on that situation. So, you know, we understand that that's our kind of our point of view for, or at least the subsistence fishermen and the family's point of view. I feel like we're up against corporate giants, and there's nothing we could do. So, other than that, families also feel that sharing information when there's any managers around is kind of like they're going to use all that information against us almost instantly. I was just talking with the elder on this, doing this final interview of questions, and it got kind of touchy. And he basically said that seems like everything that we report out onto this teleconference, and there's some management ears hanging around, and they're going to use this information against us and then create more rules and regulations to hinder our ability to sustain ourselves. And this is coming from a respected elder in my community. I totally could see that. I respect what you said, and I respect both sides. Like I said, I respect your managers, and I respect this, you know, the whole situation. So, like I said, it just, this being the final end of season salmon, summer salmon report, it just kind of feels like something else has to be done. And if the managers need a model to follow, then look no further than the families on Yukon River, man. We've been shut down for all these years. We're trying, even we're doing everything we could, you know, even more than we could. And we're even stopping our freshwater fish harvesting to get these whatever salmon saved by, you know, whatever salmon survives this gauntlet of nets out in sea and returns to the freshwater. And so, you see, we're doing everything we could, bending over backwards. We just want to see everywhere else kind of practice this, practice what they preach and get us a level playing field. Other than that, I'll tell you this much, that there's a bunch of local spawning streams, rock bed streams around Russian Mission. And, all summer long, like I said, rod and reel's been the main thing feeding us, families, all the kids, and everybody that goes rodding noticed that there's a lot of sockeyes this year. There's no humpies like I was stating, which is kind of scary. There's a lot of sockeyes and not much summer chum, and not much, well, there's hardly ever any king in our spawning streams close by, but we're starting to see abundant number of reds, and that's encouraging. There's enough spawning reds and returning reds nowadays to support black bear life and grizzly bear life. The creeks are back into little bear cities, what I'm trying to say, from the fish returning. Which is a good thing, but the bad thing is it's only sockeye, but there's no kings, no chums, hardly any, anyways, returning into these creeks and filling them up. But the good thing is they're starting to fill up with some sockeyes, and we're starting to get, starting to see more and more of those around here with the selective fishing opportunities that we had. A lot of folks went out hardcore just to get a taste of salmon, and so a few people reported to me that throughout the summer that their a number of their kings were smaller than the size of the chums that were passing And of course, everybody was releasing everything, but they noticed that the size, age, and the overall, most of the kings that they got were small jacks, smaller than a big chum, and that kind of got their attention. But needless to say, the sock guys, the reds, are here in full force and taking over, and at least in the lower river down this ways, they're starting to fill up our spawning streams. Also, there are some concerns about the method of testing salmon down at the mouth and around the sonar and pilot. We feel, you know, we know you guys are not trying to go out there and not take as much as you could with trying to get a good idea of what's in there, but another elder suggested that around Russian Mission, once you pass Devil's Elbow, the river narrows in a little bit, and the current picks up a couple miles an hour, causing fish to come into bigger schools and swim in bigger schools as they pass by. They're in bigger numbers and closer together, so he suggested that Russian Mission would be a good test site for test fishing, even after the sonar, to kind of confirm numbers down that ways. And like my buddy John, or my new buddy John, was saying, you know, the fish could be dispersed in that community, whichever communities have got that test site. So that's a pretty good idea. If there's any type of testing that has got to be done, should be done by people with the most local knowledge and dispersed by the local inhabitants. So other than that, yeah, that's basically my report from Russian Mission, where folks just wanted to express that we're doing everything we could. We're kind of losing trust in the state. Seems like all the rules and regulations are even like we're saying, even the freshwater fish restrictions are starting to get to us. There's a few mushers left down this way. It's not much, but usually we'd get by with collecting heads and guts from everybody's fish camp, or that would sustain our dogs and throughout the summer, not only throughout the summer, but, you know, throw some in the freezer and that would last, push you into training season, into early winter, before we even dip into anything else. So, yeah, some of the mushers would like to see some relaxed restrictions on the 4-inch net. Even locals, not only the mushers, the locals too. Remember, we're not out here to make or break the run with one person or one fish camp. Nobody wants to eat salmon back more than us. We just want a taste. So just the taste would be enough and to keep the tradition going. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for us. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Basil, for your comments. We will move down to District Y2, Mountain Village, Victus Point, St. Mary's. Pilot Station and Marshall. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute.
Hi, Serena.
Yes, go
can
ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I was wondering if you could back up to Holy Cross a little bit. This is David Walker.
Oh, hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah, nothing going on here. No fishing. For the record, nobody's taking any fish. The water is dropping up slowly. And this weekend, my wife and I went up 35 miles up to Inoco. And there's this, as we're going, there's this lot of pike or sheafish on top of the water. Every time we could even hear it, feel them hitting the boat. And I might be exaggerating, but a better guy could almost run across on their backs. But Yeah, I don't know. When I used to be on the river panel, there used to be reports of freshwater fish and how, you know, to those reports were useful to see if they could balance out predator control. I know the sheepfish and pike are really thriving on the Noco. I don't know about the rest of the river or in the, you know, the contributaries. I know they did some predator control over in, on the Susitna or somewhere one year. I forgot where it was, on the other side of the range anyway, and got rid of a lot of their pike. But, you know, that too is, it's, you know, the sports fishermen, you have two major sports fishermen business here on the Noco, and I suppose if they did predator control over there, they'd be stepping on their toes. That's probably a money thing for the state, you know. So, anyway, yeah, that's what I noticed when I was over there. Just pike all over the place, just hitting the boat. And, so thank you. Yeah, that's what I had been thinking about. I don't have much for words. It's really hard, you know, it hurts about the fishing, but with respect to John and Basil, you know, their ideas are... should be at least researched, and so something got to give soon, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to hear your voice. We'll move on to District 42, Mountain Village, but this point, St. Mary's Pilot Station in Marshall. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute if you are using the mobile device. If you're using your mobile device, you still need to press star 6 to unmute. Do we have someone on the line?
Yeah, hello, Serena. This is Maddie over here doing the water temp down here. It's 59.7 today, kind of cool. You know, just listening in today... to those three fellers speaking, you know, really getting me all riled up, all right. But, you know, because I bet you right now, and I'm going to speak for myself, us guys who report from the community, we all know where we could go set a net and catch a fish all the way from down here up to Eagle, where Andy lives. You know, we're all community members. We know how to fish. We're all fishermen. We're, you know, and we all lived on the Yukon for years, and who knows, you know, maybe those gentlemen's remarks should really be looked at a little bit, because, you know, there's been times here where we've been fishing when we can before the sonar is running, and then it gets set up, and there's days it had 0, 0, 0, and yet, you know, some of us go checking it, and there's a salmon in it, you know, but... anyway, those are some good heartfelt comments, and I really appreciate those guys. But anyway, thank you. That's all I got from what I'm going to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Maddie. Do we have anyone else from District Y2?
Good afternoon, Serena.
Yes, Stanislas. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to thank John and Basil for those heartfelt comments there. And for years I've been telling when I get a chance, the Fish Commissioner Lang, you know, compared to the migratory birds, when only Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon were restricted, yet the other parts where they fly to were allowed to hunt, especially sport hunters. Only when both that area was included with Scammon and Chivek and Hooper. Then we started seeing the increase in the birds. Same thing applies to this salmon. They're only looking and trying to restore half of it. It doesn't make sense. I mentioned that the migratory route needs to be looked at. If the whole migratory route is taken seriously, not just the Yukon River, we'll see increase in salmon. All the people touched on the subject of the migratory route when they speak. Over the past 5 years, I've been hearing different people talk. You know, the industry, they got a lot of lawyers. One lawyer knows how to hold the law in right hand and twist it on the left hand. You know, the department should go to their boss, Mr. Vincent Lang, and tell him, in order to see the moratorium increase of 70,000 into Canada, you can't only look at the Yukon River. You got to look at the migratory route. When we had a big crash in the 80s, everybody got up and fight for the pollock industry and the false pass. Only when they took restrictions, we seen increase in the return in salmon. You know, when people talk about the pollock fishery and the bite false pass, one elder said, it goes in one ear and come out the other. We need to put a wall between the two ears of the department heads that run our salmon. Restrictions and how to tell us when, where to fish. So, you know, other than that, I haven't heard any reports on subsistence salmon fishing down here or whitefish, but I do want to ask Keith if any results of the 6-inch or smaller mess in these side streams are going to be able to allow to, you know, if I put a 4-inch net inside on and up right in front of my camp here, tomorrow morning it's going to be swamped with pikefish. I don't deal with pikefish now. I only deal with pikefish in the springtime. Go down to Kuzulat, ice fish. That's the way I was taught, I was brought up. Hopefully we'll be able to set our 6-inch or smaller mess in these size streams that salmon don't swim down here, just so that we don't have to deal with half the size of whitefish in a regular traditionary harvest size. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Stanislas, for your comments. Again, calling the district wide too.
Hi, Serena. This is Keith.
Yes, Keith. Go ahead.
Can I respond to Stanislaw?
Yes.
Hi, Stanislaw. It's good to hear you.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So, yeah, I have a a brief update. I don't have exact dates, but for those on the call, the thing Stanislaw is talking about is during the preseason at the YERDFA preseason meetings and when the management strategy was being discussed, managers and people like Stanislaw and others were asking if they could use larger mesh gill nets such as 6-inch in areas where salmon are not actively spawning or migrating. And so we talked about allowing that, and we still plan on doing that in areas all in the – every single district has a few areas. I don't have exact dates. We're still working with the state on when the timing of that is. But, yes, those are soon to be coming. They are likely going to come after all the districts are closed for fall salmon. So it's probably going to happen later after mid-August, around mid-August. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much, Keith. You know, traditionally, I've seen it, and I've heard elders all the time tell us, when you guys go berry picking, set your net when you go pick berries, when you're done, when you're coming out, take your net out, you'll catch whitefish and sheepfish. Now, they're not doing that. I see people come in here, go berry picking in there, go back out, they go home with berries only, where it used to be berries and fish. Thank you very much, Keith. I hope it'll be mid-August, a couple of weeks from now. Thank you.
Last call for District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Marshall. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. Moving on to District Y1, Nunam, Alaknak, Imanak, and Kotlik. Again, calling on District Y1. Moving on to the coastal communities of Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Again, calling on coastal communities of Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. I'll now open the floor for any questions or discussion.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
I have two questions. Is it appropriate to still look for the Chinook passages at the pilot station's sonar and the Chinook at Eagle sonar? I listened in to get that information, but I didn't hear the Chinook at pilot station number, for instance. And I'm not sure I got the number for Chinook at Eagle sonar.
Can you please state your name and which community you're reporting on?
Well, I'm in Anchorage, but this is Jude Hensley.
Okay. I'll forward
it to you. This is Fred West with the Department of Fish and Game. Can you hear me?
Yes,
go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, so the pilot station count passage, cumulative passage right now is at 60,289 through yesterday. And the Eagle cumulative passage is 12,577.
Okay, I got that. I did get that, but it was among some chum salmon information. So that's very helpful for me. Thank you. And the other question I have for the is considering that we've got a new president in town, will this phone conversation be held next year, or does anybody know that it's either a no-go or some go or what?
Thank you for the question. This is Serena Alstrom, Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We've been doing these in-season teleconference calls for the last 20 years. Sometimes we've had to search for funding when the funding is not available. This year, we were able to obtain funding through partnerships with Canada Chiefs Conference and the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. It is uncertain whether or not we will get funded for next season's teleconference calls. Usually this is a yearly grant that we do apply for. However, we are unsure on our funding.
Okay. And I have a question for Fisheries and Ocean, if they're on.
Yes, they are.
The ladder at the Whitehorse fish hatchery, are all those fish using the ladder? Are they all hatchery Chinook? Are there any Chinook using the ladder that are going on farther up to spawning grounds?
Yeah, hey, it's Adam O'Dell coming through here. I'm the senior bio with Fisheries and Oceans in Whitehorse. So the ladder is used both by hatchery and what's considered wild Chinook. The proportions are estimated each year. I'm sorry I don't have the number in front of me, but it typically, I believe, is more predominantly hatchery fish that do pass it, but it is both wild and hatchery fish.
Okay, and what about chum? Did chum use the ladder?
I don't know that there's been a recorded chum passage on the ladder. There have been observations of chum just downstream, adjacent to Whitehorse even. But I would have to really dig to see if there's any actual recordings of chum passing it. However, yeah, in the general area, they have been observed. But I don't know that the design of the ladder had taken into consideration chum passage to begin with.
Thank you.
Yeah,
That's
thanks.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Basil, go ahead.
Hey, guys, this is while we're talking about the, what the Whitehorse dam guy, is there still a hatchery on the other side of that dam to help mitigate the cause of that dam?
Yeah. The hatchery is still there, and they do collect brood each season. Usually late August is when they do it, and the management of that has changed over the years, but the goal, more historically, I believe, has been trying to obtain 150,000 fry, but that number has not always been achieved. I think some of the years of lower returns, they've only been able to collect maybe 30, 40 fish for broodstock, and so this past year, I think they were closer to that number, maybe 120,000 fry. Were released upstream of the dam in 2024. I think that number was closer to 60 or 70,000, so quite a bit less. But that hatchery is still running. I believe, the intent of that hatchery, some people say different things, but essentially is meant, as you said, to offset impacts caused by the dam on the returning salmon upstream of it.
Okay, thank you there, buddy. Is there anything you guys do to help the out-migration, like the, they got to go through anything passing that dam, has got to go through one of them turbines, right? So those little fry, the little salmon got to make it through the turbines first. Do you guys, like, slow them down or stop them or anything?
Yeah, so that has been more of a focus in recent years, too. There's, I mean, even, I don't know if folks are aware, but there's been a whole dam relicensing program going on for the, or not program, but dam relicensing taking place over the past couple of years on this dam. And it, the impacts on salmon have been one of the main considerations, including the downstream migration of not only fry, but smolts, and trying to just understand the impacts that that dam has on those juvenile fish. And I mean, I haven't been able to review the reports, but I believe there's been about, if someone's on here who knows the numbers better than I know there's people out there, feel free to speak up. But I believe the preliminary results that they had in recognizing that it's been a pretty small sample size in their study design, but I think it's around 30% mortality for the fry. So there definitely is some mortality happening on the, the downstream migrating fish. But there are also some actions that have been taking place and are currently being proposed to try to reduce or try to mitigate, well, really try to reduce the mortality of those fish. I mean, they could be just diversions and going through a spillway as opposed to the turbines, or just altering flows or things like that to try to reduce the impacts. But that has been more of a focus, and especially with local First Nations here, Kwalnedun First Nation, Tonquichon Council, and Karkostegish First Nation, they all are in the area and upstream of the dam and have, large interests in those salmon. So they've really kind of taken the forefront on trying to work with the relicensing and trying to redesign the structures that are in there, not only for upstream passage and trying to improve the passage of migrating fish upstream of the dam, but also the downstream aspect of it. And since it really hasn't been addressed previously, as far as I know, at least in the near future, or the recent future. So there are impacts, and it's kind of ongoing, but there's a lot of focus on it in trying to improve the downstream migration and reducing the harmful impacts.
Okay, thank you, buddy, because one of the guys, like I said, I did my end-of-the-year survey, and one of the guys, the elders here, did mention that down in Oregon somewhere, they knocked off all the dams or a dam in one of the rivers, and then, boom, all the fish came back like no tomorrow. And I have never been to Canada, but I'm from way down this way and the lower end of the Yukon River. But the salmon that pass, we see all stocks of salmon that pass us, and generally the ones that are heading the farthest upstream are the biggest, juiciest kings that are passing us right here. So that would mean the genetic stock that was originally destined for the other side of that dam, maybe. So I'm not saying, blow it up or anything, but if you could find some, or if you guys could try to find some environmental friendlier ways to operate, with the salmon migration stuff going on, that would help us out greatly. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate your comments. And like, as I said too, I mean, there is a lot of focus, and it has come to the forefront in the past couple of years, and, probably leveraging this whole dam relicensing process to try to implement some of these changes to improve passage both up and downstream for salmon. And, people are fully aware of it, right? It's, that's not to say that it shouldn't have happened to begin with, and this should have happened years or decades ago, right? But there are impacts of the dam. There's also impacts of the hatchery on the fish and the composition that are, of the Chinook that are in this area and that do go upstream of that dam. There is definitely a considerable focus. And, I wish there were some individuals who are part of those working groups and part of those activities to speak to it on this call, but, maybe I'll try to look into that. And if you follow up with some additional questions and in subsequent meetings here, I'll try to be a little bit more informed myself on what exactly some of these working groups are proposing to try to reduce impacts and all of this. There's You know, it's kind of common misconception that the dam is the most upstream portion of the drainage. I did refer to the Nasutlan sonar project in the update, and that sonar project is actually further upstream, you know, river mileage-wise than the dam. That's not to reduce anything around the conservation unit and the Chinook salmon that do go past the dam and are within the Whitehorse area, but those large salmon do exploit a lot of habitats elsewhere within Canada. So there's long migrations up the Pelly River, the Stewart River, the Teslin River. It isn't only the Whitehorse area and upstream up here in the Southern Lakes. But anyway, yeah, I think everyone knows that already. So I'll stop there, but I'll also try to get a bit more information for subsequent meetings here.
Great discussion. Again, the floor is open for any additional comments or questions. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Again, the floor is open. Hearing none, I'd like to make a last announcement for our last two calls of the season. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's William in Old Crow. It's good William. To hear the report. It's low water up this way. Been a no rain, dry season. No one's fishing. And I came home one day and I got a questionnaire from my local government here on how we could manage harvesting way back, how we harvest, how we manage harvest of salmon. I was a little confused because I thought we agreed not to fish. Is there an opportunity for fishermen to fish in Canada for Chinook? The back channels and the sloughs, they're too shallow, so you fish in the main channel, you're going to grab salmon even with 4-inch mesh. So that was my question. Is there an opportunity to fish? Because they're coming up, but there's not much. My other question is, where can we purchase Chinook salmon in Canada? I still like to bring some in and show my grandchildren, you know, same way I was taught. Thank you. Good meeting.
I'll throw that question over to Jacqueline Kendall or Adam O'Dell.
Yeah, thanks, Serena. Sorry, I hope I caught most of that question there. I think it was just inquiring about Chinook fishing opportunities within Canada right now. And in Canada, for recreational fishing is closed, commercial and domestic is closed. And because the projection is so far below the rebuilding target of 71,000. So that's what we would need to see at the international border in order to have opportunities for Chinook salmon in the First Nation fish subsistence fishery. So because we are not anticipating seeing that 71,000, there are no opportunities to harvest Chinook this year in the First Nation subsistence fishery either. It's just a really low year. Unfortunately, with that low year, there's no opportunities for Chinook fishing.
Am I still on?
Oh, yep. Sorry, I could hear you. I think there was a latter part in terms of where to purchase Chinook. I'm not sure if anyone else can speak to that. I can look into that for sure, but that's not something I'm have the answer for right now.
Okay, thank you. What's the number on the Old Crow sonar for Chinook?
Yeah, thanks for that. Adam, sorry, do you mind just reminding us of that number? I think it's in the high 200s, 275, but please help confirm that if you don't mind.
Yeah, Adam here. Yeah, it's 289 as of yesterday. So it's, you know, similar to last year, pretty low.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Are there any more questions or discussion?
Hi, Serena. This is Brooke Woods. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Brooke.
I just had some general comments I've been thinking about and debating on sharing. And I'll try to go as quickly as I can. Subsistence fishing and hunting are important for the economies, culture, and ecosystem. Salmon carcasses after spawning provide crucial energy and nutrients to river ecosystems, enhancing the growth and survival of newly hatched salmon. The Yukon supports critical Pacific salmon species. Particularly important is the king salmon, which is vital to indigenous people. Only 20% of Alaska is connected by road, and there is only 3 days worth of commercial food if there are any disruptions to transportation. Our traditional territories are nestled in the most beautiful places. We don't have robust economies like urban Alaska. Our wealth is in our ways of life. Our state recognizes it as subsistence. It is our ability to hunt, fish, and gather. Our tribal members are generous. If anyone on this call were to walk off a plane or boat, he would be welcome into our home for tea, moose soup, and in the past, king salmon. The industrial pollock fishery is a significant concern, perpetuating disposition, oppression, and negatively impacting culture, food, sovereignty, and environmental justice. Alaska Native communities have long asserted that the decline of salmon population is directly linked to the prolonged bycatch from the pollock fishery, a concern that is largely ignored. Repeated failure to meet salmon escapement has resulted in widespread subsistence and commercial loss. These closures have severe consequences to Alaska Native people, leading to increased food insecurity, health crisis, and cultural disruption. Despite these impacts, industrial trawl fisheries continue with minimal accountability, exacerbating ecological harm through the capture of non-target species like salmon, halibut, and crab, further undermining Alaska Native rights to hunt and fish, and to uphold the subsistence priority. The sockeye salmon harvest in Area M was 500,000, below both of recent 5-year and 10-year averages. This necessitates a precautionary approach for next year, as a way for management to respond to the declining runs, both for sockeye and their intercept fisheries, important to Alaska Native communities and natal streams. The long-term sustainability has been a concern for many generations of fisher people. Prioritizing conservation and the well-being of Alaska wild salmon is critical. As far as the dam in Whitehorse, thousands of fish may be killed as they swim downstream through the dam in Whitehorse, a new study has suggested, and it estimated 43,000 to 200,000 juvenile salmon enter the intakes annually, and between 13,000 to 62,000 of these will be killed, representing 30% of all juvenile salmon migrating through the Whitehorse Dam. The Alaska Native people are part of the 1% club. Outside the non-subsistence area, most of the wild food harvested by local residents is composed of fish along with land animals. The subsistence food harvest by Alaska residents represents 0.9% of fish and game harvested annually in Alaska, whereas commercial fishing accounts for 98.6%. Though relatively small, subsistence fishing, hunting, and gathering provides a major part of the food supply for rural Alaska. The state estimates about 34 million pounds of wild food is harvested annually. Fish and wildlife harvest for food provide a major part of the nutritional requirement for Alaska's rural population. Subsistence fishing and hunting are a principal characteristic of rural Alaska's economy. Attaching a dollar value to wild food harvest is difficult because subsistence products do not circulate in markets. However, if families did not have subsistence food, substitutes would have to be purchased. If one assumes replacement expense of $5 to $10 per pound, the simple replacement value of wild food harvest of communities outside non-subsistence areas is estimated to be $170 to $340 million annually. Subsistence use of fish and land animals are given a priority over commercial fishing and recreational and personal use fishing in state and federal law. This means when the harvestable portion of fish stock or game populations is not sufficient for all public use, subsistence uses are restricted. We have yet to see subsistence priority prevail in river, as all federal and state fisheries remain open at full capacity. And again, that 1% of subsistence is crucial to Alaska Native peoples and communities along the Yukon River. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Brooke. Great to hear you. Always enjoy your comments. Last call for any questions or comments.
Thank you, Brooke. That sounded pretty darn good. John Deck, really. And as far as that, Basil, if you would love to see my idea take birth, relay that idea to your local tribal council. And we can all start at that level. And since we're government to government nowadays, you know, it might be legal as our tribal governments to just operate that site on their own and inform the state of Alaska and the federal government that we're doing it. We just at a local level got to do it, maybe. But we got to look into that as our own people, you know. We have a lot of good laws that we can do stuff like that. So bring to your local tribal council and spread it down to Yukon. Thank you very much. I appreciate all you guys' time and efforts on this issue. And that old man from way down there, gee, thank you for your words. I really appreciated them. That reminded me of a lot of things from long ago that I was taught at the very first meeting. So you remind me of one friend I had. I didn't even know his name, but that's who you reminded me of. But I greatly appreciated your words. You sounded like the most wisest guy on the conference. I don't know what kind of education you got, but you got was the fullest meat and sound. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you, John. Again, a couple announcements before we end today's call. We only have two calls left. And next week, we'll have our policy coordinator, Olivia Irwin, talk about the differences between management today and co-management. And there'll be a little bit more interactive discussion during our last call on August 12th. So please spread the word. Tell your cousin and your brother and your brother-in-law and your sister to call in. during these last two calls, we appreciate it. Thank you for your time, your efforts, and we'll talk to you next week at 1 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Serena.
Thank you, Stanislav.
Bye.
Thank you, Serena.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Serena. Bye.
Enjoy your week.
Thank you, Rita.
You're welcome.
You guys videotaped me, I think.
Yeah, we did. Good to hear you, John.
Okay, have a good one. Thank you.
Yes, you too.
You.